Getting the smile and confidence you've been dreaming about, all from the comfort of your home, isn't a total mystery with Bite Clear Aligners. Just don't be surprised if all your friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Bite Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Welcome back to Kotaku Split Screen, the only podcast that is about to get its very own bridge baby. It's September 26th, 2019, and Kirk and I are flying solo on this week's episode, talking about playing as the horrible and wonderful goose in Untitled Goose Game. Kirk is also playing a wealth of cool games that Apple Arcade has to offer, from Sayonara Wild Hearts to What the Golf. We talk about the future of subscription services, and we read a bunch of listener emails about weird gaming traditions. Then we do off-topic talk about Dark Crystal, Hustlers, and Kirk's music pick. Let's get to it! Welcome back to another episode of Kotaku Split Screen. I'm Maddie Myers, and I am joined only by Kirk Hamilton. Hello, Kirk.
Hello, Maddie. Yes, it is just me for a very exciting reason, is that right?
That is right. Although, even when this episode is out, I'm not entirely sure if Jason will have a child because it's just that his wife is currently in labor, and that can take a very long time. So people might not want to be sending their congratulations quite yet. They might be sending some hang in there messages, perhaps, or perhaps there will be a baby. Who knows?
Who knows? Who knows? Who can know?
It's
very
say.
Exciting, though. I'm glad that Jason is furthering the human race. And hopefully, yeah, he'll have an exciting announcement for everybody soon.
Mm-hmm. So that's cool. But it means it's just the two of us. And
it does.
It is also just the two of us spontaneously. So we don't have a guest set up. It's just us. Just us doing the show today.
It is. We've got some fun stuff to talk about. I feel like I actually played like a ton of games for reasons we'll talk about in a second. We're going to do some of the non-essential traditions that listeners sent in. People sent in a whole bunch of those. So we're going to talk about those. There's a whole lot of stuff to talk about. So why don't we get into it? Let's talk about video games, Maddie. What video games are you playing?
Well, I have beaten a little game called Untitled Goose Game, which I love. It's my goatee. It's not my game of the year, but it might be a goatee.
It's your goose of the year.
It's definitely my goose, of the year. I love this game. I mostly want to talk about how this game forced me to overcome this hurdle that I have in games where I have a lot of trouble playing as a bad person, which I think is fairly common. Like if you have like being a jerk in Mass Effect, I could never bring myself to choose the truly cruel or renegade options or Dragon Age or whatever, where you can be kind of a jerk. There are many games where you play as essentially a terrorist, but you like think of yourself as the good guy, like a BioShock, if you will, or other games of that nature. That's fine with me for some reason, but Untitled Goose Game is a game that is, you're really just ruining people's days for the sake of ruining their days, and it's like extremely small stakes day ruining, but it's still a certain headspace that you have to get in where you're like, well, I guess I'm just gonna play this game as a goose who is a dick to everyone. So I guess I should explain what this game is in case anyone
has no
clue.
Yes, why don't we zoom out and tell
what
people
it is. But that
what
is
the titled Untitled Goose Game is.
So you play as a goose in a small town in, I guess, the UK. I don't know. The developers
English.
Are from there. So it feels kind of
I
like
I think that it's an Australian developer.
Oh, are they? Okay.
But,
see, I don't know what accents are, guys. Forgive me. I can't recognize anyone's accent.
It feels like caricature of an English countryside town, though. Like you
Yeah,
this
or
is
like
town
a
where
small
people are gardening
town
and,
somewhere, and there's just little cute cottagey houses, just a few people who live in this town. And you play as a goose who walks or swims around the streams in the town, just wreaking havoc. And so there's not really a plot. In each area, you have a to-do list, which I guess you've created as a goose, which in and of itself is hilarious. Yeah. And oh, sure. All of the items on the to-do list are just various ways that you can be obnoxious. So, like, mm-hmm. in the first area, you come across this garden where there's, like, a gardener who's, you know, decking out his yard and probably sells the fruits and vegetables that he's growing. And so you're basically just ruining this man's small business by, like, you know, stealing food from his garden and, like, putting it in another location for the to-do list item that's, like, have a picnic, and you have to, like, collect certain items from his garden and steal them and, like, put them on a picnic blanket that's, like, someone else's picnic blanket.
Sometimes the to-do list items are, like, a puzzle, right? Like, there are a couple in there. One is, like, make him put on his sun hat.
Yes.
And it isn't as explicit as steal his hat. I mean, obviously, you have to steal his hat to make him do that.
And you have to hide the hat from him. So that he doesn't just put it back on. And then he, like, irritatedly will walk back over to his sun hat. I don't know. I don't remember who tweeted this, but, like, somebody tweeted, like, a shot of Bradley Cooper and American Sniper, like, aiming his gun and just captioned it, like, trying to get the gardener to put on his sun hat, which is, like, the extent of the machinations that you have to do in this game, where you're like, okay, like, he's going to figure out where I am with the hat, so I need to, like, distract him by, like, ruining a lot of stuff over on this side of the garden that then he'll be so busy doing that he won't notice that I'm ruining this other stuff over here, or, like, he'll trip over this on his way to, like, run towards me while I have his hat, so I'll, like,
I'm actually curious, like, the hat was a little tricky for me. I got him to take the hat because there's a flower that there's this one tulip, and if you take the tulip and then drop it, like, he'll get really mad, and then he goes and plants it, and there's a whole long animation while he's planting it, and if you steal his hat while he's doing that, he keeps planting it so you can get away from him. Because it's interesting, when you steal something, they can run a little bit faster than you, the humans can, so you can't quite get away. Like, there's a whole ridiculous chase sequence while the goose flaps its wings and runs, but they always do catch you. So you can't just run up and grab something and try to get away. Like, that never works.
You can a little bit, because you can also steal something back, because once they take something back from you, they'll turn around and they'll start walking away from you relatively slowly, and so then you can kind of sneak back up on them and take it back out of their hand and try to quickly run away, which I think is what I did with the hat, but I think I don't remember how I did that. I think I did a few tries with that, but I do remember a few other times where I'd be like, the gardener or whomever I'm picking on will be so distracted with thing X that they won't notice I'm doing thing Y. So I'm going to, like, knock over a bunch of stuff. They'll be in this area, like, picking up all the stuff I've knocked over so that I can achieve this other significantly more irritating thing that I'm actually trying to do. Uh-huh. And again, this is so against how I think about games or play them that it was like learning a new awful skill, like, to get myself to even do this. And the first, you know, 30 minutes or so that I was playing this game, I was like, I don't know if I have it in me, because I was, like, watching this gardener, like, going about his ordinary day and just being like, I don't want to ruin this guy's day. Like, he's got a little garden. Like, he's got stuff to do. I'm just a goose. Like, what? Who am I to do these items on my to-do list? But then I'd just be like, well, I'll just do, like, one thing. And then once you start doing a few of them, you're like, okay, but it's way easier to get these done if I, like, destroy certain parts of this area so that the person has to fix those things so that I can just quickly do these things on my to-do list. And, like, the more you do that, the more fun it is to be like, ruining stuff is great and it's fun.
Right.
And then by the time you get to the second area where there's, like, the child who's terrified of the goose and everything, and you're just like, boy, I love torture now. Torture's good now, and I'm happy to honk at this child who's afraid of me. And I don't know, I just, like, completely fell down the slippery slope into being a total dick in this game, but that's exactly what you're supposed to do. Whatever. I don't know. You're playing this game too, so what do you think about it?
I am. I also love it. I think it's wonderful. There's a lot that I like about it. One of the things that I like is just that so much care has been put into the creation of this game. What makes the game fantastic to me is the way the goose has been brought to life, like the way this game looks in motion. I'm sure a lot of people listening to this have, if they haven't played it, have at least seen GIFs or videos of this.
You shouldn't watch the announcement trailer or the launch trailer at least, like, just to get a sense of it.
When this game was, like, first showed, I think it was at Global Game Jam. This is, like, you know, it was just this little idea, and it was just immediately irresistible to everyone. Like, Kotaku was constantly running, since I was still at Kotaku at the time, we were always running headlines about the Asshole Goose Game.
Yeah.
And it didn't have a name, and it kind of, this game interestingly evolved along with its marketing, and it's like its creation happened kind of in real time. They were like, oh, people really like this idea, okay. And there's some other cool stuff with the soundtrack even that happened sort of organically.
They had made a version of the trailer that had clips of this certain WC song, which is in the final game, and like they just prelude. Designed certain parts of the song to play at different moments in the trailer, and like a bunch of people commenting on the trailer were like, I really hope this is what the music does in the actual game, and it like apparently totally wasn't what the music did in the game, so they just found a way to make that work. And it's one of the great things about the game that like certain snippets of the song will play when you do different things, and like if you're running away from someone like carrying it, like the song will like play a more active part and like be a little more exciting. But if it's like you just honk at somebody, you like maybe get like a little dramatic piano chord. I don't know. It rules so hard.
Yeah, it's amazing. There's a we'll link this in show notes. There's a cool Verge interview with Dan Golding, who's the composer, who I actually know from like video game Twitter. He is a really smart dude. He's written some great criticism and is a good composer. He hosts a couple of podcasts. He hosts a podcast about movie music that I gather is super, super good. So he's a cool guy. I think it's rad that he did this. And he talked about, like taking the WC and he did a couple different performances of the Prelude and like cut it up. And it's a cool article that people should check out. But that's so one more thing that like developed, you know, kind of in the open as people were like, well, you should make it do this. And the developer said, okay, sure. And they figured it out. But there's this, I was tweeting about this game, and Bruce Straley, formerly of Naughty Dog, was sort of in my mentions talking about, he like loves the game too. And he's like, this is just the best idea for a video game ever. You're just
it's
a goose
so
who ruins people's days. But he was talking about the animation on the goose. And specifically, he pointed out, so the goose looks really great. I mean, it's just funny to watch the goose walk around. And that to me makes this game work. I have a thought about that. I guess I'll get into it in a second. It makes it work on this basic level, though, that it's just funny to watch at all times. Like, it's just funny because the goose is just funny looking. Like, it's just, you can play this. I play this on the couch with Emily, and like, we're just laughing all the time because the goose is very funny. And one thing it does, this is what Bruce Straley pointed out, is the goose makes eye contact with things. It like has an attention built in, and the camera will kind of pan to like the person. When you walk into the frame and there's something there, object of interest, the goose kind of looks over at it.
Yeah.
And it gives the goose this personality. It just is perfect. It looks kind of like, it's like, ah, there's a person I can mess with.
I know.
And then when someone chases you away when you get spotted, the best is the goose keeps looking at them, and you'll kind of slink around a corner, but
and
it's
like,
kind of looking
look
sideways
at
them.
Too. Like, they animate the other people in the game the way that people are in real life with a goose, where you see a goose and you're like, oh no. Like
what do I do?
This goose could peck at me and like try to steal my french fries and like actually pose a potential problem in my life, but I'm just going to stand here and stare at it for a second. And they have each character do that exact weird thing where they see the goose and they're like, and like they just look at you, and the goose looks at them and is like, what's up?
And
I'm a goose.
Eye contact
you can't do anything.
I tweeted
anything.
This video. So the video I tweeted was literally me walking up to a guy and honking, and the guy turns around, and then we look at each other, and then I honk again. And this isn't like a scripted thing in the game.
There's a honk button, by the way.
There's
of course. A thing.
And there's a dedicated wing flap button that I think doesn't serve a function in
it
the game.
It doesn't.
You just flap your
wings. There's one puzzle where you need it that you maybe haven't gotten to yet.
It largely
doesn't need to be there. Like, for a while I was like, does flapping my wings help me jump higher or like run faster? It doesn't.
It just looks funny.
A thing you can do. I don't know.
So I posted this video of that, and that was such an encapsulation of the game. That wasn't even me doing anything in the game. It wasn't scripted. It was just, but it was hilarious because all the animations and the way they've like created everything is so believable and funny. And that, I think, is just kind of amazing. Like, they did all this work just because it is funny to watch a goose walk around and pick stuff up and cause trouble. And that's the appeal of the game. So that's one thing I like. And I think that that low-level like humor, the way that you're always laughing, it's sort of like how a lot of great games have some low-level appeal. You know, we've talked about Gears a lot, like Gears of War is like very tactilely like pleasing to play, or like a lot of mobile games, they just get some really nice little thing. And in this game, it's sort of similar, only it's just that it's funny all the time. It's just always funny to watch the goose doing stuff. And to get to the thing you're talking about with being an asshole, the stakes of the game are such a crucial part of what make it so enjoyable to me, that like it's not a stealth game where you get killed or something. There's never going to game over scene where a goose is being cooked in a, you know, in an oven or whatever.
Spoilers, it doesn't end that way. That would be horrible if it ended with a goose's death.
Yeah, I guess I haven't finished, so I don't know that.
It doesn't seem
like that kind of game.
No. They got to make a billion sequels, right? I mean, I hope so.
Hopefully,
anyway.
Yeah. Hopefully they let people make like modded stuff. Like I feel like people could do really cool stuff on
Definitely.
Their own.
Definitely.
But yeah, there's not really stakes. You chase a kid and he gets scared. You know, you like pull a gardener.
People chase you away. Like as soon as you're caught when you're sneaking around as the goose, like all that really happens is someone just is like, hey, get out of here. And like brushes you away.
And on the flip side, at least so far, I haven't like done horrible damage to anybody either. Like what I'm doing isn't that bad. I'm just being basically
irritating.
I'm an agent of chaos. You are a chaos agent in this game. You have been dispatched by the Dark Lord to like remind these people that their perfect idyllic little country lives aren't so perfect.
I guess.
That there are geese. So that, I think, is a big key to why it's so fun to be a jerk in this game. Like, I think that that is what makes it work, where in a game like Mass Effect, like, I'm with you. I never play as a jerk in those long RPGs because there's such long consequences in those. You never even know, you know, what your jerky behavior is going to lead to. In 20 hours, maybe it'll be horrible and your favorite character will, like, leave your party or
you've,
try
like,
to kill you.
Or you've, like, led to a massacre of people on some other planet somewhere and now you have to, like, reckon with that. I mean, that happens even when you're trying to be a good guy in a video game.
And that can be, and actually, I've always thought that's the more interesting thing is when they're just outcome, you know, like, Dragon Age does that better than Mass Effect, where it's not that coded thing. Mm-hmm. But either way, and those are cool. Like, that's just a very different kind of game. But in terms of just getting people to be a jerk and to embrace that, like, kind of Agent of Chaos gameplay, it's a good way of doing it. It's interesting. The other game that I haven't played this week, though, that has new content is Hitman, the Hitman 2, which just got a new level that I'm super psyched about because I'm always psyched for more Hitman. This game reminds me of Hitman in a lot of ways because of the way it's like a world that's kind of ticking along on its own. It's these little mini kind of sandboxes and you just poke at it and make stuff happen. And then you try to like arrange the dominoes so that you can achieve your goals.
Yeah.
And it's much less violent and also much less complex and sort of, you know, really deep and complicated the way the Hitman is. But it's still the same fundamental idea. It's just like a much easier to play kind of more, I don't want to use the word casual, but it's like a more like low key.
Lighthearted. I mean, it's almost like if you want to get your child started on stealth games, you would like give them this game and then later be like, great, now you can play Marco the Ninja. And then after that, you can play something slightly more violent.
Right. Like and soon you'll be straight up murdering people. But remember, it all started with that goose, that horrible goose.
Because it's the same mechanics as a stealth game, but instead of like getting killed by the government when you're found, you're just like pushed away with a broom and like
what if like the
scolded.
Sequel to Goose Game is like the goose gets recruited by the government and then you like go do actual spy missions.
Terrible.
It's like I'd be amazing.
I just
he puts on like a military bandana.
A little sash. Yeah, epaulettes.
Like infiltrate the terrorist compound.
Yeah, yeah. I don't know. That'd really funny, but I think that part of what's so great about the game is that it will never be that. And also that it's like it's kind of realistic. I mean, it's very silly, but like the stakes feel somewhat real. Like it's just real enough that the goose is never getting into so much trouble that you're like, this is absurd. But it's also like no goose would ever behave in this way. Like the goose is sort of intelligent on a level that doesn't fully make sense, but
right, that's
you
the
go
one
with it.
Absurd element, really, of the whole thing.
But it's like the goose can't speak English, and also there's no dialogue at all in the game. I don't know. I was impressed by how many times I laughed at this game, considering that there's no dialogue at all or like story. So it's just entirely weird setup.
It's like a Charlie Chaplin movie. Like it's like watching a Charlie Chaplin movie. Like it has that feeling.
And a lot of them are setups that you create. Like you can just choose when to honk at someone based on when it's funny to do that, and then like see what happens. Like I don't know. There's this part of the game. I don't know how far you are, but there's a part where you can hide in a box, which is like very Metal Goose solid. Like it's
funny.
Like they clearly
no,
just let you hide in a box because it's like hilarious that you could hide in a box.
Do you like walk with the box over
but,
you?
But people can pick up the box and carry you around, and you use that as a way to trick them. And like I just endlessly delighted in leaving. Leaping out of the box and honking at people because it's like it's just really funny. I don't know. It's like the worst, but it's so funny.
It's
to like
funny to watch a goose
watch
do just about anything, as it turns
just
out.
Just freak out and be like, "Oh, there's a goose in this box that I thought was empty." Like it's just, I don't know. It's amazing. It's a great game.
It is,
and I love it. Anyway,
I'm with you as well. I love it as well. I love it more than I thought I would. I
Me
was like,
too.
Maybe this is just one of those things that's funny in trailers, but playing it, I think that it is wonderful and people should definitely play it.
Yeah. And it's not long either. It's like a couple hours or three hours, depending on how much time you spend honking at people and messing around in the game. And yeah, it's a good length too for a game,
which is nice, especially for that kind of game. It's like, there's one joke in this game basically.
Yeah.
And like, it doesn't, it's nice to hear it doesn't overstay its welcome.
Yeah, totally. So what else are you playing?
Well, I played a little more Gears 5, though I hit the boss in Act 2 that I think you had mentioned, and mm-hmm. just sort of, like, I got stuck on it, kind of. Like, I haven't put a ton of work into it, but it is a tough, it's a big difficulty spike. And then I just kind of maybe lost interest or temporarily lost interest. It's sort of a bummer.
That boss is tough. I don't know.
And it just, so it was the experience of, and this is definitely, I think, partly having a lot of things to play, having a lot of other stuff to do, also, like, I didn't pay for the game. So, you know, I think this is a mix of things. If I had bought this game and this was like my big game, I'd be like,
screw
oh, yeah,
it. I'm going to beat it. Yeah.
Keep going. Yeah, of course. But so that's a little where I'm coming from. But yeah, like I was fighting this boss. It's this huge monster boss in this constrained area that is.
She's
very
called
typical,
the Matriarch.
And is looks a lot like, I think it was called, was it the Behemoth? There was the thing in the first game that
Berserker
hunted by sound.
Or something. Yeah. Yeah.
And I think that was,
idea.
It's a very much modeled after that. This is another blind thing that like chases you around. And it has a weak point on its back. And if you play this with a friend, I could see it being cool to like kite the boss, one person, the other person shoots it in the back. It's got that like very tried and true two-player boss thing, but I'm playing it by myself and my AI guy is like not doing much, so it's more about you have to kind of lure it into this frozen water and then shoot it in the back, then get away. The problem I'm having is just the boss is like a one-hit kill just about any time it touches you. It can just grab you and rip you in half and you just die, like, or it can just jump out of the water and you just die, like. So there's a lot of deaths where I'll be doing okay and, you know, it's just kind of tedious because it's like, okay, to lure it into the thing, then when it gets stunned, shoot it in the back, then get out of the way, then lure it into the thing, and you can do that 5 or 6 times and think, okay, I'm getting there, and then it just kills you because you do one thing wrong and you get instantly killed. And I just kind of did that a few times and just sort of bailed. So I'll maybe keep playing. I'm digging this story. The game is cool. It does remind me of like Gears of War Uncharted, but it's I'm kind of stuck on that. And then there were other things to play, and the Goose game came out, and I was like, I like this game. Nobody is killing me in this game. So
yeah,
I the Goose
totally
game.
Understand that. It was definitely like in reviewing it, I had to play it by myself, and that whole boss fight, I was like, this would have been so much easier with a second person, and I felt sad about it. I would recommend playing Gears 5 with a friend. That's my hot tip about that game.
That seems like that'd be a fun way to do it. That was how I played Gears 4, and it was cool. So other things I've been playing. Okay, so I went ahead and got the Apple Arcade, and I was kind of skeptical about it last week. I listened back to our episode. I was like, kind of like, I don't know. I don't know if I want to do this. $5 a month. So for starters, there's a free first month you can do. And I have a pretty recent iPhone, and so I thought, well, okay. I mean, whatever. I could do this. I do a podcast about video games. I should probably download all these brand new video games and play some of them and talk about them. So I have. It's way more interesting to me than I thought it was last week, and I think I've got a lot of thoughts about it. We can talk about Apple Arcade big picture maybe in the next segment, but I'm just gonna go through the games that I've been playing. I'll pull out my phone in a second, and literally I didn't even write them all down. I'll just look through. There's so many games on this thing, and a lot of them are really good. That's the thing about Apple Arcade that is wild to me, that I just couldn't get until I downloaded all the games and started playing them. But there's some really good ones. So first of all, special shout out to Sayonara Wild Hearts. This is the new Simogo game. It's like a music rhythm game that is freaking awesome. I'm playing it really slowly. It's not very long. And like, it's just a series of, I guess I'd describe it as, you're always racing forward. You're this,
it's this infinite runner is usually what this is called. I don't know if it's quite that. I haven't played this game.
I guess that's kind of what it is. It is sort of like Infinite Runners. I hadn't thought of it in that context, but it is. It feels more like a playable album or something. My knowledge is like limited. I'm going to finish it by next week and we'll like talk about everything, because there's like the music in it is, I believe, original music, and it's really cool. It's this sort of synth dream pop band that sounds a lot like Churches, actually. It's a beautiful female vocals and like pulsing synths and really like lush stuff. It's good. The music is awesome. And you're this woman who like had her heart broken and is now like traveling through these parallel dimensions. There's a lot of like interesting symbolism, and actually the story, there's a lot going on. It even has some kind of Kojima-esque narrative stuff, like in the way that the characters are these archetypes and the way that each boss battle is like really carefully designed and really different. So it's really interesting, and you fly through it because you're constantly just flying forward. You're kind of dodging left and right and picking up things and like timing button presses sometimes. Pretty simple inputs, but it changes a lot. Like you're riding a motorcycle and you're flying through the air and you're surfing on a big, you know, tarot card, and then you're like driving a car, and there's like all, it like is constantly shifting, and it's so well made and smooth, and like these transitions will happen where you'll go flying through a door and the camera zooms out and then the perspective completely shifts, and it all happens seamlessly while the music is like playing and shifting. So It feels like a playable album. That's like a way I would describe it.
Yeah, it sounds awesome.
And I've been
awesome.
Playing it. It's amazing. Like, I really just, it's, you would love it. Like, people should definitely play this, especially if you have Apple Arcade. Come on, it's like free. Just play it. It's also on Switch and I think maybe PS4.
Yeah.
But anyway, so I've been playing it on my phone. And it's great. So that's just like a hearty recommendation of that game. Sumogo is great too. Also, there are other games like Device 6 is so freaking cool, that phone game. And they made Year Walk. That game's really cool. They're a great studio. So the way I've been playing this, I went ahead and bought one of those little plastic clips that clips onto your PS4 controller. And mm-hmm. then you put your phone like yes. up above the PS4 controller.
So you're playing it with a controller in your phone yes. like a... Yes. Nintendo like DS, a, except for
right,
the controller
like
in
handheld,
your phone.
Right, like a handheld game system with a DualShock 4. It's a little, I'd never used one of these before. It's a little mm-hmm. ungainly, like the phone's a little heavy. So it's like, you know, it's not quite ergonomically
Are you
designed.
Like hurting your neck by, like, where do you put the controller in terms of your field of vision?
I just hold it, you can rotate the screen. I just kind of hold it right in front, like kind of like any, like you'd imagine, like just in front of you. It doesn't hurt my neck. It's just a little like heavy. But I actually haven't found too much discomfort. It's a cool way to play. And it's wild. This is a new thing in iOS 13, but you can just sync a DualShock 4 to your phone like that.
Yeah.
Like it doesn't require anything. And a lot of these games on Apple Arcade work with a controller. And so there's a whole bunch of them. There's this Capcom game that, like, I guess I'll go through them now. So anyway, that's a cool way to play it. Some of them are touchscreen as well, but that, you know, those things, it was like $10. Those things are like super cheap. It'll probably break in like a week. But I was like, oh, whatever, I'm going to get this and play this. So, all right, I'm going to get my phone. Hang on. All right, here we go. I'm just going to go through, and I'm going to give, like, really quick impressions of a bunch of these games.
Do you not want to do this after the break? You want to do it now?
No, I'm going to do it now. And then,
okay, cool.
Then we can... I'll really go fast. And then we'll talk about Apple. Because there's, like, what does Apple Arcade mean for the future? Like, that's kind
sure,
of a separate,
sure.
interesting
okay.
thing. Okay. There's a game called Spec that's really cool. It's, like, you have a line, but then you move the line, and the perspective changes. Because there's
Ooh.
Just one line of an outline. It's kind of a perspective game. And you're constantly rearranging this line to try to get this thing that moves along the line to, like, trigger different like weak points in the game. So it's basically a perspective puzzle game, but it's extremely, extremely cool. So, all right, that's Spec, S-P-E-K. Okay, next, What the Golf. I've played that. This game is freaking hilarious. Have you heard of What the Golf or
no.
seen any of What the Golf? Oh my God. This is a game where it's a golf game. So it's, you know, you're hitting the ball toward mm-hmm. the hole. Only every single hole is a joke and is different. So the very first thing you do, or one of the first things you do, is you go to putt. There's like a really basic putting thing. You just slide your finger on the screen, and instead of the ball going, your guy goes flying through there.
Okay.
And then, like, you have to, and each time you putt, your guy just flies toward the hole, and then you just have to hit the flag at the end. And there's always a little punchline at the end of each one. Yeah, with your guy. And then it's like, you'll go and it'll be like the hole itself, and you'll be like hitting the hole backwards down the thing. And then you'll be hitting like 1,000 golf balls, and they'll all just be going. And then it'll go 2D, and you have to get them up. So it just is constantly shifting until you're doing like an office chair, and you're like trying to roll it down. And then you have to like beat a sheep in the bonus round to like, and it's running toward the thing. And it's all goofy physics. It's like a goofy physics game, you know, like, I don't know, Octodad or something. So it's just got, it's really, really funny and really good. And yeah, I'm hugely into it. Okay, Assemble. That's the next one. Or Assemble with Care, I believe it's called. It just says Assemble. This is a game made by Us Two, the people who made Monument Valley.
Okay,
and
I like that game.
It's cool. I always like have this like minor gripe with Us Two games that I have with this game too. It's really slick and really cool. You're this woman who like puts things back together. So
mm-hmm.
the game will just be, you'll have a phone, someone will have a broken phone, and it'll be all in pieces, and you take the pieces and like unscrew the parts and like replace the broken part with the fixed part, and like you're
mm-hmm.
sliding it around with your finger on the screen. It's very pleasing and like really cool.
Very
I'm
House
like halfway
Flipper.
Through it.
I would probably like this.
Yeah, it's super got that like pleasing quality. Though it's overwritten though, and
no.
I always get this feeling. I got this feeling from Monument Valley too. Too, that it was just a little bit like created in a lab of like, let's just take a bunch of indie tropes, like a lost young girl looking through a magical kingdom. And I don't know, like it just always feels a little bit like lab grown. And this does too. It's very, oh, like we're going to learn about these people through their belongings, which is like a great idea. But then they keep explaining who the people are and like, oh, she like her mom's not around. Oh, it's so sad. And like these things where you, if it had been really subtle and you had just been putting together the things, I feel like I would have liked that more, but I get why they would want to go for something bigger. Anyway, Assemble with Care. It's still a really cool game. Oceanhorn 2, I've only played a little bit of it. It's like Zelda. It's like a third, like, over-the-shoulder Zelda game. It's
cool.
It's almost a little much. It works with a controller, so that's pretty cool. There's a game called like Shinsekai The Depths or something like that. This is the Capcom game.
Okay.
That is a Metroidvania underwater style game.
Oh, yeah. I think this is one Steven was trying to sell me on. Is it good?
Yeah. I haven't played that much because, like I said, I'm just cranking through these and just checking them all out. But it's like a whole video game. Like, and it works with the controller. And like, it's like,
can you
really
believe this?
Cool.
They made a whole video game, but it's on your phone.
This one, more than a lot of them, makes me think, and the way that it just works with the controller and the way, yeah, I'm plugging it in, I'm like, this just, you could put so many games on this thing now that it works this way. It is very cool. Projection is a game where it's like, what are they like? They're like shadow puppets, like silhouette puppets, where you, yeah, they like have the like little toothpicks attached to them, and they're kind of walking around, and you play as the silhouette puppet little girl who goes on an adventure, and it's all shadow and light plays, so you'll control this light that then casts a shadow that creates a wall you can jump on, because you can interact with some shadows.
Yeah.
Very cool. I saw Fahey liked Cat Quest 2. I haven't played it.
Yeah.
Let me see. I'll go through a few more of these. Bleak Sword is this kind of Dark Souls-like,
yeah,
really
Josh is writing
looking.
That up as we speak, I
it's
believe.
Cool.
He likes it, yeah.
Yeah, it's fun. It's like got good touch controls. I hear that Cricket Through the Ages is hilarious. That's like one of these fake documentaries about the game of cricket that makes up a whole bunch of stuff about like dinosaurs playing cricket. And it's like narrated by this droll narrator. And I gather it's very, very funny. There's a bunch of platformers. There's like a Rayman game. You can play that with a controller. There's a new whatchamacallit? What's the lady's name? Oh, a new Shantae game? That was like a Genesis game or something.
Yeah.
And I'm looking through this. There's Dear Reader. There's this game called Dear Reader where you are given quotes. The first was from Pride and Prejudice, and it'll be the opening paragraph of Pride and Prejudice. And they'll remove a few words from the paragraph, and you have to choose where the words go. So you're kind of just reading Emily Dickinson and then pressing button, like just kind of rearranging it, and it helps you internalize what you're reading a little bit more. It's like, I don't really know. I haven't played that much of it, but it's pretty cool and very different. There's Exit the Gungeon, which is like a side-scrolling sequel to Enter the Gungeon. There's Skate City. It's this kind of like skateboarding game. I played a little bit of that. It was cool. There's a Sonic Racing game. I mean, I guess I could keep going forever. I've played a lot of these, and they're all like, they're really good. There's still more that I haven't played. I haven't played Zach Gage's game. He's got a game on here.
Yeah.
So this thing is crazy. Like, so we'll talk about the actual Apple Arcade in the next segment. But just even if that gives you a sense,
As a preface, it's crazy. There's too many games. They're too good.
They're really good. And like, it's really impressive. I've like did not expect to think it was this cool. And I think that it's very, very, very cool. So yeah.
That's awesome. That's what I've been playing. Well, let's take a little break and then we'll talk about Apple Arcade and what it means for the future.
Angie's List is now Angie, and we've heard a lot of theories about why.
I thought it was an eco move. Fewer words, less paper.
No, it was so you could say it faster.
No, it's to be more iconic.
Must be a tech thing.
But those aren't quite right. It's because now you can compare upfront prices, book a service instantly, and even get your project handled from start to finish.
Sounds easy.
It is, and it makes us so much more than just a list. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I. Or download the app today.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
All right, so I want to talk a little bit more about Apple Arcade. First, just a news thing that I saw right before we recorded, and I threw it into the document because that's how we do things when Jason's not around. We just throw news items in. I just thought this was cool. Apparently, the Oculus Kinect thing is going on right now.
Mm-hmm.
This is my obligatory little VR news because I'm the only VR nerd on this podcast. But
right.
They announced that this new thing called Oculus Link that's coming at some point in the fairly near future, which is Oculus Quest was this headset they released that I don't have, but it's this thing that lets you put it on and you can just play it anywhere. It doesn't require you to be plugged into a computer. And it's like really cool, apparently. Everybody says it's great. But it's low powered because, you know, it's kind of running on a phone. You know, it's not it's not as powerful as your gaming PC, but you can play a bunch of cool stuff on it, and it's really good. They're releasing a thing called Oculus Link that lets you plug that into your gaming PC if you want and use it like an Oculus Rift for all the big, you know, the big, mighty Oculus games. So basically, there's now going to just be this one system that you can either plug into a gaming PC and play, you know, a bunch of the, like, main big games, or you can just unplug it, take it on the go, take it out in your yard, take it to your friend's house, and, like, play a bunch of smaller stuff. That's like a really big deal. I think that's really cool. I'm probably not going to buy an Oculus Quest, but that's a pretty cool announcement, and it's nice to see that they're still making new things. So anyways,
it is cool. Now you're all about gaming on the go. Apple Arcade,
I know, man.
Wearing an Oculus outside in your yard. You're going to be that guy. That sounds great.
I really want to at some point be like riding my bike down the street and see someone out in their yard playing Oculus Quest, because that would be a great place to do it. You'd have no walls. You could like play a big, you know, play
what
super hot
in a big
open space. What if you
wandered into the street? Maybe if your yard has a fence, then it's
right,
fine.
Right, that's true. I think you can establish boundaries still. And you would look like all the people during that one part in the terrible Ready Player One movie where it feels like Steven Spielberg is making fun of the entire premise of the movie and he cuts to everybody like, pachoo, pachoo, like out in their real lives in their underpants or whatever on their
great
couch.
Great stuff.
Yeah. Good stuff. Okay, Apple Arcade, let's talk about it. Okay, so like I've mentioned, I'm way more impressed with this thing than I thought I would be. I have a lot of thoughts about it. First of all, I want to shout out listener Charles, who wrote in. When I mentioned last week that I was sort of exhausted by, or I was like worried that we're reaching peak, you know, subscription
like, service
costs. It's getting really expensive. And I was like, I want a calculator where I can just check all the things that I'm subscribed to and it'll, you know, tell me a total number. And Charles wrote in and said, I couldn't find something like that. So I made it. And so he made one and I did it and it works. It's like actually very helpful.
It's awesome. So if you don't want to make your own spreadsheet that sums up a column, Charles has already done it for you.
You can just go on the web and do it. I mean, who wants to make a spreadsheet when
it's boring.
So we'll link that in the show notes, but that was very useful. So thank you, Charles, for doing that. That's really cool. Okay, so Apple Arcade. The first thing that's cool about this, I think, is that for the first time since I can't remember when, it just feels like mobile games are something that I have any interest in talking about. And, you know, everybody has any interest in talking about. Like, there's a lot of people talking about this and writing about it. But that, to me, feels remarkable, right? Like, when was the last time anything related to mobile gaming felt vital or important?
Or, like, encroached upon the games journalism world of what we talk about. Like, for better or worse, I feel like usually the mobile game conversation is, like, people trying to convince the greater gamer audience, like, no, this one's really good. And, like, every now and then one will rise above. Like, Monument Valley is a good example. Or, like, there have been a few other mobile games that kind of, like, encroach into that area. But this is, like, such a huge amount of games that it's undeniable in some way. And, yeah, definitely, like, I see people who I've never seen talk or write about mobile games, and their Twitters and articles are now full of like, but seriously though, this Apple Arcade stuff is really cool. And that is wild to see for sure.
Yeah, there was this period of time, I think this was before you were at Kotaku, when we did Kotaku Mobile. We had all these branded sort of
verticals.
Oh yeah,
that was definitely before my time.
That was quite a ways back, I guess. And Kotaku Mobile was always this interesting challenge. I think Kotaku Social also existed, and Mike Fahey was sort of shepherding them both. And he did a ton of work and like all this cool stuff. He played all these games and wrote about them. But it was really tricky to get people to care, because even then there was always this feeling of, oh, but mobile games are kind of trash. Like they all have these built-in, whatever, microtransactions. And there were so many headlines of like, oh, but this one's different, which, like you said, often that would be the case. There'd be really cool games on mobile that would be amazing, like Reigns. I remember when I first played Reigns, being like, this game is so cool. It works perfectly on a phone. It's like a really brilliant game. And you want to say to people, ah, this one's different. But then they hear that so many times, and eventually it's like, I don't know, this whole thing is a cesspool. And as the years went on, it just kind of, like, I just stopped thinking about it, really, or caring. Like, ah, yeah, I could get games on my, I have all these games on my phone. Some of them are really good, and I can't play them anywhere else, but I just don't care. So it's remarkable that Apple did this thing and, like, put all this stuff together and, like, drop this meteor on everyone in order to make everybody pay attention again. And it really worked, because the games are all really good. And it's this, it gives you this kind of alternate reality, right, where mobile gaming didn't just become this kind of bummer cesspool of knockoffs and, like, IP stealing and free-to-play psychology games, and instead was just a bunch of the best kinds of mobile games, you know, that are really cool. So I think that's a remarkable thing about this. Like, I don't know who at Apple was in charge of this. Apple's super opaque. You know, they don't.
Yeah, we'll probably never know.
Yeah, well, maybe not. And at least if they talk a little more about the process of this, because nobody else is really positioned to do something like this.
That's true.
And it feels different. Like, it feels like something I've never quite seen in video games before.
But I feel like the big but there is the fact that you still haven't paid for any of the games that you've gotten on the service yet. And that is the question that everyone has about this, which is like, well, how is this a sustainable model? And is it a sustainable model? And I don't know. It's not why I haven't gotten it, but it's definitely a question that's lurking in the back of my mind. And we touched on it a little bit last week. Like, just I have guilt about these kinds of services and our new subscription flavored future. And I don't know. I don't think I can do anything about it, but I don't love it.
So your guilt is related to what exactly?
I don't know. I've been thinking a lot about this since we talked about it. And I'm like, I feel like I actually have started to devalue a lot of pieces of media in ways that I didn't do when I was growing up in the 90s. And I was like, I used to go to Blockbuster and spend a couple bucks on renting a movie. But nowadays, I don't want to spend $5 on quote unquote renting a movie from iTunes. I just don't. I'd rather watch a different movie on a subscription service that I pay for than pay not that much more money to rent a movie. And I'm like, why is that? That's interesting. Like, that is clearly a mental change in me that I've observed. And I feel similarly about games. And like Jason was saying before, like, mobile games in particular have just been framed as ephemeral and valueless for so long that it's taking a lot for me to get over that mental hurdle and be like, they actually are a thing I should be paying for. And I actually probably always should have been paying $5 for each of these games if that were ever possible. But that wasn't. It was not something that those games could do because they knew I wouldn't pay for them. And so they structured themselves in such a way that I didn't have to. And like, I've gotten hours of enjoyment out of the Harry Potter game and I've not spent a dime on it. And so my enjoyment is basically something that I'm having at expense of the whales out there who are funding this game. And like, that's not a great feeling for me to have about like the creation of that game, like leaving aside any other concerns I might have about that game and its location services. Like, I have other ethical concerns about that game and how it's funded. And so then I'm like, okay, cool. Like, in theory, Apple Arcade is the answer to my problems. It's a subscription service. Mentally, I've already accepted that subscription services are a thing I'm willing to pay for. But am I paying enough for them? Like, that's not a problem I can solve individually. It's just something I'm thinking about, you know?
That makes sense. Yeah, and I've seen all these people weighing in about how Apple is paying developers for this stuff, even though it seems to me there's almost no information about it. I was trying to track down sources after people were weighing in on this rumor that like Apple was paying people by playtime.
I mean, there was nothing there. Yeah, I don't think that many developers are speaking out about this right now because they want to keep their deal with Apple. So most of those things are like anonymous rumors for now. But
right. And I did see an article, this is on Game Daily, that said Apple is fronting development costs. So like, that's cool. And anyways, there are questions about like the business end of this.
Yeah.
And there is a flip side to what you're talking about, which is that in specific to video games, because video games are often so expensive and also like time expensive, there's this feeling that people don't really branch out very often and try other things. And that's one of the cool things here is that I haven't really felt this feeling before. And I do get this on Netflix, actually. It is sort of similar. But the feeling of, well, I have this huge list of things I can play. Let's just screw around. Like, let's try the game where you're picking words in the Emily Dickinson chapters. You know, let's play this like real-time strategy game, or this turn-based strategy game, or this survival game, or this like Dark Souls-like action game. And that is pretty cool. Like, I feel like that could lead a lot of people to trying a whole lot of different things, especially during this free month. And that's kind of neat. Like, I like the idea of spreading that around and just giving people more options. Because like on Netflix, I'll just watch a movie I never would have rented or gone out of my way to pay extra to watch.
Or like on Spotify, you can be like, hey, like build me a list of recommended artists based on the things I already like. And if there were a subscription service for games that did something like that, it would be a game changer, for lack of a better phrase. Like, it'd be really cool.
It's also interesting that like Netflix funds the creation of these movies and stuff, and those are Netflix movies and Netflix owns them.
Right, now it does. It didn't start out that way, but like you can sort of see a trail here where it's like, what if other game services had subscription models and then they could start actually funding games in a meaningful way? And like, they're, you know, Netflix shows at this point, I feel like we or at least I associate the Netflix brand with like good shows because they've like effectively spearheaded and directed enough shows that I think are good that I'm like, Netflix is a good property, regardless of whether that's actually true. I know nothing about their business practices, but right. like, you know what I mean? Like you could totally do this. Like they've done it. And I feel like that could happen in games, but it's me. So I can't not also think, is this maybe bad? Am I placing trust in a system sure, sure. that has failed me in other ways? And do I want everything to be a subscription service? I'm not sure I actually want that. I don't know.
Right. Yeah. The question of whether I want it or not is, I think the jury is out for a lot of
reasons. Yeah, it doesn't matter. We're getting it.
So there are all these unknowns about this. Apple is, you know, going to be adding a lot more games. We had a reader write in to say that they say there's 100 plus games and there's like 70 games on the service right now. I think because they're planning to get to 100 pretty quickly, there are always new games coming out. Mm-hmm. And it's not clear what this will look like. Is it really going to be worth it every month? One important distinction with the Netflix comparison is that Apple is not the publisher of these games. So Apple doesn't own them, which is actually really interesting. So that's the reason that Sayonara Wild Hearts, for example, is on Switch and on, I think, PS4. Like, you can play it on other systems. They have like some sort of exclusivity deal. I think it's mobile exclusivity maybe, or there's like a variety of different exclusivity deals you can sign with them. And I think they give you maybe different amounts of money or different compensation, who knows. But that is like a pretty significant difference, because when Netflix makes Stranger Things or like whatever, you know, whatever movie.
Yeah, like it's Netflix not available movie. Anywhere else.
It's a Netflix movie. You can only ever watch it on Netflix. These games, that's not necessarily the case. And I think Apple has said, I saw this around anyways, that they're like, if it ever stops working for like someone who made a game and us, we'll just, you know, they can go do their own thing and we'll stop giving them, you know, we'll take them off the service and they can sell it separately or whatever. There is the question of, if you can get all these games for free, if someone doesn't want to be on Apple Arcade and release a mobile game, then they maybe are kind of fucked.
Yeah.
Because why would you pay $7.99?
Now you're saying your game costs $5 when I can spend $5 to play 70 games right now? Like, that does really change the dynamic of
it. Could, and like when you look at Spotify, which like I have all kinds of problems with the Spotify model, you know, and that is this thing where it's changed the whole way that people make money with music. It doesn't make it impossible to make money with music, it just means that it's different. Like, there are some people who will buy the album, or they'll buy the collector's edition, or they'll go out of their way to support the artist, or they'll go see them on tour. And like, maybe video games are gonna have to start going on tour and selling merch,
maybe, like. Or maybe they're gonna have to do something like what artists do with music. Like, I do this where I'm like, you know, you can listen to my stuff on Spotify all you want, but like, please also just buy it on Bandcamp one time, and you can then you can do whatever you want. And I don't know if even saying that has any effect, but every now and then I'll get an email from someone who's like, I saw that you said that and I decided to buy your album. But the equivalent for this was that I was like, so I want to play Sayonara Wild Hearts. Should I buy it on my Switch, even if I'm just going to play it on my phone? Just because maybe buying it on my Switch gives the developers more money, but I have no idea if it does.
Right, you also don't even know that, right? Like, it just costs you $15 or whatever.
Yeah, it's like, I guess I could do that for no reason. But I feel like with music, I kind of know, like, Bandcamp gives people the highest cut, and then after that, it's like iTunes. And I mean, I only know that stuff because I do it, but I am curious about those things with games because I care about supporting the stuff I like, and I like the idea of paying $5 for a ton of games, but I'm also like, is this bad? This is maybe too good. This is too many games.
It's kind of that feeling of when someone launches a new service like this, and we're seeing these increasingly, like, we're seeing more of this. I think the Epic Game Store is doing some sort of similar things where they're really helping with development and giving a lot of guarantees and money to help people in exchange for exclusivity. And they're giving away all these free games too. I mean, Jesus, the Epic Game Store just gave away the whole Batman Arkham trilogy last week, which is like a ton of really
good
video
games. Those are fun games. Yeah,
they're good, really good games. So like, they're, you know, there's this feeling of this stuff is being subsidized by these major companies. And it would be great if we lived in a world where it was like, you get your games for cheaper, the developers get covered, everybody comes out ahead. There's all these arguments for that. And of course, there nothing ever is that clean, right? So there are definitely unanswered questions, and I'll be curious how it goes. I'm going to keep playing these games.
You should.
It's fun to just go through them and keep messing with them. And yeah, I do have the question of, will I pay $5 a month for this every month in addition to all these other things? Maybe.
Yeah, maybe. I don't know. What do you think about the idea of the playtime percentage model? Like, I feel like that's the only real fair way to do it, but I don't know how you'd measure any other way.
I think you can't really just do it on that metric because the games are all so different, and Apple has like explicitly said, we really want to have like oddball games and games that are not like things you play anywhere else. And some of these games, you play through them once, like that Assemble with Care game. It's like you play through that once and you're basically done. Other games are like, you can play them for hours and hours and hours, and you wouldn't want to put in a put in place a system that it encourages people to make these like endlessly grindy games. Like I can't imagine that. I mean, maybe they'd be stupid enough to do that, but that would screw up the whole thing. Yeah. So maybe just something else, like just number of people playing it, or they like figure out some matrix that works if you're playing a shorter game, like they value that a certain way. If it's an endless game, they value it a different way.
It's a way of thinking about games that I buck against already so much. Like a friend of mine was talking about how she wanted to get Fire Emblem, but like it was an expensive game. And I immediately was like, but it's so long. And then I'm like, why am I thinking about it that way? Like I really try not to do that with games and be like, well, there's other things that provide value in a game besides it's 70 hours or significantly longer than that if you want to play every route. But it's hard because like time is also a pretty significant factor in life.
It's just especially in, you know, the society we live in. Like, I mean, it's the same with a streaming service. Like right now I'm about to cancel Hulu because there's nothing left that I watch on it. And it's that same thing of, well, like I don't watch any of these things, so I'm not getting anything out of this thing that I'm paying for, so I'm not going to pay for it. It would be the same with the subscription service. And, you know, a video game kind of can feel the same way. Oh, I paid $60 for that game. I mean, I haven't bought Link to the Past, or no, not Link to the Past.
Link's Awakening.
Link's Awakening. Because I'm like, like it's a Game Boy game. It sounds cool, but I don't know. And it's $60. Like, I'm like that. I have a feeling I would buy that and then I'd play it and then I would be thinking about what else I could have spent that $60 on. And like, that's just how it works. So it'll kind of always be there one way or another. It's just a new model raises new, potentially interesting questions about how that will work. So
and
I guess
what
we'll
is
see.
Value, man?
What is value? What are
anyway.
Video games? So we asked you guys, you listeners, for your traditions based on a really fun letter that we got about a tradition that had nothing to do with the game. There was an Assassin's Creed Odyssey from a listener, and it was really funny. And so we said, hey, we don't actually have a lot of these, you know, traditions that we do with our friends or something in a game that has nothing to do with the game. A whole bunch of you wrote in. They were really great. There are some really funny traditions we got, way more than we could share, but we wanted to share some of the ones that we liked on this episode. So I guess I'm going to do the first one.
Sure.
Let's just go through them. We'll just read
these. Yeah, we'll just read them.
So enjoy.
They're great.
Here are everybody's weird traditions that they do with their friends. Okay, so this comes from Scott. Scott writes, in Left 4 Dead, for whatever reason, maybe by design for this very purpose, there was a button you could press to hand a teammate pills, a temporary hit point boost in the game. Characters would audibly call out, pills here, as an audio cue when they were found. Whenever we heard the call out, we always started a makeshift game of tag. It didn't matter how busy we were with zombie hordes or if we were exploring some new or rarely used area. Whoever found the pills first started the chain. They would run up to another teammate and force them to take the pills. I remember you'd like press a button and be like, bam, you know, you have pills. This meant that whoever got the pills swapped their active item, even if it was a gun or something they were currently using, for the pills. You could not refuse or block them when someone gave you the pills in the game, making this a very effective game of tag. The person who got the pills would need to disengage with whatever they were doing and go tag the next person and so on until someone needed them bad enough to actually take the health. We could have just pocketed the pills, swapped back to a weapon, and said, okay, very funny, guys, but it was too much fun to force them on someone else after getting them yourself. I know why most other games don't allow your teammates to force an item on you, much less make that item your current active item when handed off, but I'm very glad Left 4 Dead did it because it made for a lot of memorable back and forths. I love that.
This is amazing, and I love it.
I remember that. Someone would give it to you, and sometimes you'd be shooting, and then suddenly you would just take pills because someone like threw them at you.
I was like, take these pills.
You're like,
it's like a completely absurd design, especially for that particular game where like a lot of times you are in the middle of some shit you really can't be doing that. But it's hilarious to imagine like playing this weird game with your friends. And then, of course, eventually someone would actually need to take the pills because you're probably taking damage.
You're playing attacked in the middle of your game of tag.
So eventually somebody just buckles down and takes the pills. Anyway, great
That's
game.
Good.
I hope other people play this
good
terrible
one. Makes
game.
Me do it. Nice. All right, Maddie, you want to do the next
we'll
one?
Read the next one. It's from Jordan, who writes, I wanted to tell you guys about a couple Smash Bros. Traditions me and my friends have just kind of fallen into with the release of Smash Ultimate. First, we have a thing called Respect the Random, where anybody can pick the random character option and say, Respect the Random. Everybody else who's playing now must select random, no matter what. Our second tradition is definitely the more interesting one. It only applies if a bout is down to the last two players and one player has one stock left. If the player with one stock left has an attack of theirs shield parried, I'm sure Maddie can explain. I'm sure I can't. I barely understand how parries work in Smash, but I know it's a thing. Anyway,
I basically get the gist.
Yeah. Then that player must respect the parry and immediately, without question, jump off the edge and lose the match. This has led to hilarious scenarios with two people each trying to parry the other's attack to win the match. This is great, and I love it.
You've been dishonored by this parry. You've just been owned so hard you have to just kill yourself. And
yeah, it's great. It actually reminded me a little bit. I think I talked about it on the show about how there's one iteration of Soul Calibur where you can like turn the hit points down to just one ticky box, and then you can play with just swords, and then you can just play a sword fight that's actually like you would die as soon as you're hit with the sword. It reminds me of that. Mm-hmm. Anyway, you can read the next one.
All right, next one comes from Keith. Keith writes, when you were talking about silly gaming rituals that people come up with, I remembered a couple from playing The Division when it first came out. The silliest is probably that as we went through the campaign missions, when we got a boss down to their last half of health, I started to say, the old ways are the best. And I would switch to my pistol and just go face to face with them until they died. After the first couple of tries, all of my teammates did it as well. The four of us would swarm the now alone boss, chanting, the old ways are the best, as we finished them off with pistols. Irony, of course, being that it's a quote from some movie where they're talking about stabbing someone instead of using a gun. But you can't stab someone in The Division, so they had to use a gun.
So you got to use the pistol, which is at least like the least powerful.
Right, and just it's still really like these traditions. Anytime it's in a shooter game, are just always kind of fucked up. Like
a bunch of people chanting the old ways are the best while shooting a gun. There were a few other traditions we didn't include here that were like deeply funny to me, but like also sort of fucked up. Right, I was just like, because why is this funny? Like, video games are messed up, and like all of these traditions revolve around either dying or killing someone. So whatever.
Because
look what we're
doing here. I enjoy that. I like that the two of those both involved chants that people would begin together, and you just had to respect the chant once the chant begins. That's good. Yeah. This is definitely, by the way, proving the point that these are mostly social things. Like, it's all about traditions you do with your friends. Mm-hmm. Like, again, I could see that doing it by yourself. And I guess Keith is saying he has done that by himself, but then he inspired his teammates to join.
To do it, yeah. We did get a few that were things people did by themselves. We get multiple people who say they eat vegetarian in games because they're vegetarian or pescatarian. Good. Those were some common ones. And just people who were like respectful of games or role playing in a way that were very fun. But clearly the ones I thought were funnest and picked for this roundup were the social ones, because I don't know, they're really funny. Anyway, this next one is from someone who doesn't use their real name for their email. So we'll just call them Freud Trip because that's what they go by.
That's and a cool they write, name. Maybe it's a real name.
Maybe it is. Maybe their name is Freud Tripp. What's up, Freud? Anyway, they write, hey, longtime fan and listener and also new father. Good luck, Jason. And I wanted to respond to your call for more stories about video game rituals. My friend and I have played Destiny 1 and 2 a ton together. And our weird game ritual is this. Whenever we'd be hanging out at the tower waiting for our third fire team member to log on or finish managing their vault, we would pick another Destiny player at random, crouch down, and watch them from about 10 feet away. When the player would move, we would slowly and sneakily crouch walk and follow them around the tower, careful to always stay behind them and slightly out of sight. Of course, this guardian stranger would eventually catch on to what we were doing and would often turn around and run at us, at which point we would scatter like flies and run away until they stopped pursuing us. Usually, this poor guardian would then return to another vendor, turn in some quests, and then, upon exiting the vendor screen, turn around to see my friend and I, once again, crouching and watching from a distance. Eventually, the game of cat and mouse would end with everyone dancing together until our new friend left for a different planet, leaving us to pick a new target and start anew. I have no idea how and why we started doing this, but man, we shared so many moments of giggling while we tried to be sneaky, then squealing when we were caught and sprinting away. There was almost a childlike, nonsensical joy to the whole thing, like it was some kind of game I would play as a kid. Even though there were no quest rewards for this activity, I dare say it places within my top five memories of the countless hours I invested in Destiny 1 and 2. It's great.
I love this. I've seen people doing, I've done stuff kind of like this. I have this memory of being in the tower once and a couple, like I think it was because I was in my menus. When you're in your menus, you know, you can see a little thing next to them, so you'll know.
Yes.
And I came out of my menus and all these people were standing around me and they were all like dancing and like teabagging and stuff. And
that's
I was
great.
Like, what is happening? And I just like started dancing and it was super funny. Like just people who do that.
Yeah.
This also reminds me of when I was a kid, I'm going to tell a little story about young Kirk Hamilton. When I was a kid, I was like really into spy stuff. Like I thought spy shit was really cool.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember, I feel like I like got a like spy kit of toys that had like a little like plastic periscope and stuff.
Like
and,
mirror
like, binoculars.
Sunglasses and stuff so you
exactly,
can see behind yourself.
Exactly.
Yeah, sure.
Right, or like I think there was like a camera that looked like a box of Good and Plenty or something, some crappy disposable camera.
Sure.
Anyway, and I really wanted to go to the mall and like practice trailing people, like pick a person and follow them, which is sort of like this. And I remember being like, oh, I really want to do that. Like, that'd be so fun. I could like hide and like see if they spot me. And I think my mom was like, dude, you can't do that. You can't just go like harass
people
at the mall
and
follow them
someone.
Around. Like, you're gonna, I mean, get, you're in
a child, so like maybe you can, but it's like not a good idea.
But even then, yeah, maybe don't do that. And so I never did that. But I remember being like, what? That'll be fun. That would be fine. It was classic kid logic. So yeah,
that's great.
Anyways, this is very, very fun. All right, I'll read the next one, which comes from Hugh. Hugh writes, in Destiny, my clan buddies and I like to do goofy emote combos at mission ends. My favorite is when I start eating popcorn and my buddy comes in with the salt emote and salts the popcorn, and then our warlock gives us the no, no, no and starts sweeping up the mess. The other weird one is that my buddies did in college is we would take turns playing Call of Duty multiplayer. You would have to do push-ups after matches for every death in the match that you played. We later adapted this to solving basic math derivative equations, because getting all antsy and then having to think about math is a great way to make sure you stay calm in math tests.
I love this. Like this last idea where like you're practicing doing math while you're already stressed out from playing a Call of Duty match is like wild.
It's very
to me.
Smart. It's a good idea because it puts you under pressure and you're, yeah.
It's like a fun way to study while also playing Call of Duty with your friends. Sure. Yeah. I guess that kind of works.
And the emote one is funny because now they've added all these emotes to Destiny where like they're two person emotes. Like you can do a high five and the other person does it too. But I like the ones where people creatively do things. Like the salt one is just supposed to be like, oh, you being salty? Like, I kill you. It's like kind of a like taunt. Yeah. And there's a popcorn eating where you're just like, it's like Michael Jackson eating
popcorn. Like you're watching something funny.
Right, something funny. And so combining them cleverly is a very fun thing to do. So I like that too.
Yeah.
Why don't you read this last one from Matt?
Sure. Matt writes, when I am playing a really beautiful cinematic game, I treat it as if I am a master camera operator designing shots for a film or game cinematic. If I'm in an Uncharted or Tomb Raider, climbing ancient stairs with an epic destination or archway above, I will slowly pedestal the camera down as I'm playing till the shot is low angle enough to add a sense of dominance to what is ahead of me, as well as a sense of striving forward on an epic journey. Similarly, when approaching a cliffside with a magnificent mountainscape view, especially if the character is pondering life decisions, I will slowly walk them to the edge and circle the camera around them in a slow arc as they stand in silent contemplation. As a photographer who graduated from film school, this is how I add a heightened sense of narrative to the visuals. I never move on from a scene till I've shot it right. I like this. And this is actually a solo one. I do this sometimes. I don't do it as often as a photographer or film school grad might do it, but every now and then I'll put somebody in a dramatic position and like move the camera around them and be like, video games are cool and I'm making it look even cooler.
It's funny because like I feel like I've watched so many E3 demos, and E3 demos are always like this. The camera just moves to perfectly frame all the sick graphics. And I do that too. I think we're all just, I've at least seen so many of them. There are just times where I'm like, okay, I got to frame the sick graphics appropriately, you know, and sweep it out. Plus, you never know if in our line of work you're capturing maybe for something that you're going to publish and use, so you want it to look nice.
You want it to look good.
I find that's a thing that the controller is good for, like the controller thumbstick on the camera, where when I'm playing with a mouse, I'm just all over the place. It's like moving super fast and it looks terrible. Like the footage just looks like shit. I can always tell when I'm watching.
You can't do like a slow pan with a mouse, really.
It just feels weird. And so whenever I'm watching gameplay footage on someone's YouTube channel, I'm always like, ah, they're playing with a mouse. It looks like crazy instead of like super cinematic. But yeah, no, I like this too. And definitely do it sometimes. So yeah, it's good.
Yeah, these were so great. I love these gaming traditions.
I would share more next week if you have good ones to send, by all means. Thank you everyone who sent them in. These are extremely entertaining. Even the ones we didn't get to read were really good.
They were all great. They were wonderful. Cool.
You're all a bunch of weirdos.
Keep being weirdos. Keep it up.
Keep being weird. It's great. We love it. All right, why don't we take a break and then do some off-topic stuff.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
And we're back to talk about some things that aren't video games.
Sure.
Kirk, why don't you start?
Okay. Well, I finished Dark Crystal: Age of Resistance, which I've already raved about at length on this show. It's really freaking amazing. This is the Jim Henson puppet prequel, 10-episode prequel series.
Have you watched actual Dark Crystal yet, or are you still not watching
still
the
haven't.
Actual
Well,
movie?
It's on Netflix, and I'm still. It's the very next thing you're going to watch. I was seeing clips from it, and I was like, okay, I've seen some of this, but I still haven't seen it. Though I now know the events of the movie and like know what happens. So the show is like set way, way in the previous. Like, it's the, everything it's a prequel, is very, very different.
Right. It's just funny to me that the movie came out so long ago and you still haven't watched it, and you're about to describe having seen a making of documentary about the show. I don't know. It's so just funny. But don't watch it. Maybe don't watch it. I don't know.
No, no. 100% going to watch it. But I do want to tell people about this making of documentary, because in raving about the show, I was like, I would love to watch a making of documentary about this, because it's so incredible. I mean, the puppet work, the sets, everything. The whole time I'm sitting there thinking, how the hell did they do this? Now I know how they did this, and it makes me want to rewatch the entire thing, or just go watch the movie, because they did it all the same way. They brought in all the same people. It's so many of the same people. Obviously, Jim Henson is no longer alive, but so many other people that were involved in this. His other, the main collaborative creator, the artist who was behind this whole thing, his children, like so many people were involved in making this. And the documentary is awesome. First off, everybody should watch this show. It is like a titanic feat of everything. Watching the documentary only gives me a better appreciation for that. I didn't know so much about how Muppetry works, like the kind of puppetry that they do. Mm. There are still times where I would be watching things, they'd be showing how they're doing it. And the Mystics, for example, they're these guys who are these kind of low, sort of mole-looking, long guys, where they have multiple hands, and one hand will kind of come around the back.
Right.
And they show how they have, like, two people around the sides, and then one person doing the hand, and then the head is moving around and talking, and it looks like a person is in there, but a person is not in there, and there's never a person's head in the head of the thing talking. It's always a hand.
Right.
And then they have people with, like, mechanical remote controls who are working the eyebrows and the eyes, like, from a distance. There are
Wild.
Multiple people doing it, and they did cop to doing a little bit of CGI on some things to like add tiny little motions, which they get a little defensive about it, and they're like, they feel like they're very like, we're not shitting all over Jim Henson's legacy here, this is just a cool thing that he would have used too. And I think that's fair, like from watching the show it's fine.
Yeah.
Like, it adds a little bit of extra shine to a couple of things. Anyways, it's so cool. The Skeksis, like, people get inside of the Skeksis and wear them on their heads. So their hand is going up above their head, and then they're walking around, and you can see them making it'll be this big Skeksis bird monster, which are, you know, they're so horrible. But then there will be these, like, Converse sneakers underneath it from the puppet, the puppeteer who's walking around. All these puppeteers, the people, they're all fascinating to me. They're like this mix of dancer and actor, mm-hmm. where you have to be so in tune with, like, the physicality of a person. They do all the line reads, and, like, they act out the scenes, and then the voice actors do have to do their like dialogue to line up with something that's already been recorded. So it's very different than like, you know, anime or video game voice work. I guess it's kind of like doing a dub, like
right.
you would be doing a dub voiceover. So it's so cool. I could go on and on and on, but like that, I'm obsessed with how they made it. I'm absolutely going to watch the movie. I'm excited actually to kind of watch it in the like chronological order, but that, you know, in out of order, the way that it was created. And yeah, it's really cool. So hearty recommendation to watch.
That's
all
awesome.
That.
Well, yeah. I watched a movie that is out in theaters now, and it's called Hustlers. Have you,
oh,
you
man.
Haven't seen this yet? Do you know
anything
not, about
but
it?
I really want to see it. I know it's based on a true story. I read a little bit of the article it's based on, but I want to hear about it.
Yeah. So I had not read the article it was based on, knew absolutely nothing at all about the film
in,
which was a fun way to go into it. Like, I didn't even really know it was based on a true story, which of course they tell you in the title card before the movie, so I figured that out. But I didn't know that it was about strippers or sex work, or that it was about a series of cons that these women pulled and what happened afterwards. And I didn't know anything, and that was a very fun way to go into it, but I'm sure it's also enjoyable, even if you already know those things that I just told the listeners. So it stars Constance Wu and Jennifer Lopez. And what's interesting about that, having read the article after the fact, is that Jennifer Lopez is actually significantly older than even the woman that she's playing in the original, which I actually thought was really cool. So like in the movie, there's this whole plot line with her character, who's based on a real person, where it's like she's still a stripper, she's still working, but she's much older than the other women at the club. And so she's sort of found these other ways to make money and like have influence in that sphere. Like a lot of times she'll sort of befriend younger women who are starting out and sort of coach them. So she's sort of more like a teacher as opposed to working in the same way. And in the story, she's described as 30, I believe, but J-Lo's, I think, 50. So I just thought it was like kind of neat because there aren't that many roles for older women in Hollywood. And I was like, well, you know what? Like, screw it. Let's just say she's 50 and she's a stripper. Like, why not? That's not what it is in reality. But like, that's really cool. And also, I've always actually thought Jennifer Lopez is a pretty good actress. Like,
oh, totally agree. She just hasn't really had that. Out of Sight is a super good movie. I love Out of Sight.
And like, maybe she's just good at multiple things. I don't know. I thought she was great in this movie. She plays a very interesting character. It's a lot of anti-heroine stuff in this because you've got these characters who are like in this kind of tough situation financially, but like they become incredibly rich because of these cons that they're pulling, but you can't help but root for them because you're like, God, fuck these guys who they're screwing over.
It's all like financial slime balls and people that they're like taking Wall for a ride, right?
Wall Street guys, and they're like super slimy.
It's such a movie of the era.
It is. But then, of course, things go too far, and you start being like, oh, are they taking advantage of people? And it's interesting, and they all have their own little moral crises about it, and that's, you know, that's the third act turn of the film, of course, that you would expect. It's a bit overlong. I feel like the movie really delights in its, like, strip club sequences in ways that are really fun, but also, like, very lengthy, and you sort of have to be like, okay, like, I'm signing up for this. And there's a lot of, like, shopping sequences that are like very indulgent and like fun to watch, but you kind of have to be in the headspace of that like joyous decadence that this film is like very much delighting in. And so I don't know, I really enjoyed it. It's not that deep as a movie, but it's fun, and it's really cool to see a movie with two really great actresses in it just killing it and getting to play some like complicated cool women were real. I really like that. So
that's awesome. I love Constance Wu. I didn't realize she was in this, but she's blowing up, man. She's she's becoming like a really big deal, so that's sweet. I'm definitely gonna see that movie at some point.
I think you'll enjoy it. I think most people would, so I recommend it. So
nice.
No NFL pick of the week, by the way.
No NFL pick. So music pick of the week. Let's do it. So I have been playing a lot of guitar. I got a Stratocaster kind of recently, which I never had a Stratocaster.
What?
That's like the Fender guitar, like the one that everybody played.
The guitar everybody has in college.
Right.
How did you not have one?
So I always played Telecasters. That's like always been my thing. There was only like a period in the early 2000s, and that was when I was learning guitar, where like Telecaster was like the cool guitar. Like everyone in every indie band played a Tele. And Strat was like kind of not that cool.
Right.
But lately, and then especially on that, on the on the Like a Prayer episode of Strong Songs, there's this guitar tone that's like really a Strat. Like it's Strat in like the, you know, whatever, the fourth pickup position. And it's just the sound that is like so 80s and so pop, such a Strat sound. And I was like, fuck, I really want that sound. So
it's
anyways,
back,
I found a used Strat and got one. And so I've been practicing a lot of guitar and a lot of blues guitar. I'm working through a like book on blues and like doing all this stuff. It's been really, really fun. And man, as a result of that, unsurprisingly, I've been listening to a lot of Jimi Hendrix. And so this music
pick wrong with that.
Is, man, this is Little Wing by Jimi Hendrix. This is from Axis Bold as Love. Everybody should go listen to Axis Bold as Love. I hadn't listened to it in a while. Damn, that's a good record.
Yep.
So here is a clip of Jimi Hendrix that from the beginning, just his guitar playing on this, man, it's so good. Here's Little Wing by Jimi Hendrix. Was good. He died so young. He was like 27 when he recorded that.
I know.
Jesus, he was so good.
So good. It's a classic. Classic
Jimmy,
song.
It was a classic. There's a Stevie Ray Vaughan version of that song too. That's super good. Stevie is someone I haven't listened to that much because he's such a guitar god. But now they've been doing all this blues guitar stuff and listen to all this.
You're
Stevie
just gonna
Ray
listen
too.
To all the guitar gods.
Yeah,
gotta,
just sit around like everyone who played a Stratocaster.
Whatever,
and, like,
yeah, just like
killed it.
Just yep. listen to all the 80s and 90s guitar gods and get super
that
good
is,
at guitar.
That is the plan. So yeah, that's it for this week. We'll probably maybe there will be a fourth member of the split screen crew. Next week we can have Jason's baby on the show.
Yeah, she's gonna be screaming. It'll be great.
Oh yeah, she'll be. This is what we do on the show is we basically just scream, you know, incoherently. So she'll be a good addition. I
can't wait for
host.
Her to add her takes on games to
she'll
our show
like,
someday.
Like, oh, so what do you think of Death Stranding?
I mean, there's a baby in that game. Like, she will probably have opinions about the baby.
She could review
accuracy.
It for Kotaku. Death Stranding, the Kotaku baby review.
That would
it's
rule.
Just a bunch of mashed out consonants on the keyboard.
I'll let Jason know that that's his assignment as soon as he gets all back. Right, is nice. That? Anyway.
That sounds good. Until then, I will see you next week.
Yes,
Maddie.
You will. Bye.
Kotaku Split Screen is an official podcast of Kotaku.com. It's produced by Kirk Hamilton, Jason Schreier, and me, Maddie Myers. Kirk edits and mixes the podcast and also wrote and performed our theme song and other music. We're a part of the Fusion Podcast Network, where Mandana Mofidi is executive producer of audio. You can find us on popular podcast services like Panoply, NPR One, Google Play, and Apple Podcasts, and we hope you'll leave us a review if you like what you hear. Find old episodes at kotaku.com/splitscreen. Email us at splitscreen@kotaku.com.